Shlomo HaMelech says in Kohelet 8, Lachashot ve'eit yudaber. There's a time to remain silent, and there's a time to speak. Rashi, Eit Lachashot pa'amin shadam shotek u'mutaber schar. There are times that a man remains silent and is rewarded. Shenema, as it says, Vayidom Aaron. Aaron was silent following the death, the tragic death of his two sons. At the dedication of the Mishkan, he remained silent. The Zohar, he was rewarded, Shetnityachet Hagdibur Imo, that God spoke to him directly when he gave the next parsha in Torah to the Jewish people, as it says, Vayedaber Hashem el Aaron. Usually it is Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe, God spoke to Moshe, but over here, because of his silence, it says Vayedaber Hashem el Aaron. Yayin v'shechar al teish. That's the parsha that a kohen is not permitted to drink any intoxicating beverages before he enters the sanctuary. Ve'ed l'daber. There's also a time to speak. Oz yoshir Moshe. Moshe sang. Vatoshar Devorah. Devorah sings. And then, of course, Rashi also brings the pasuk of the Haftorah that is said on Shabbos Shuva. That Shabbos Shuva, the Haftorah says, Kechu imachem devorim, take with yourselves words, v'shuvu el Hashem, and return to God. Imru, say it clearly, that you have finally arrived at the conclusion. Ashur lo yoshienu, Ashur is not going to save us. Al sus lo nirkov, we're not going to ride on the horses. That's a metaphor for Egypt. We're not going to depend on Egypt. And we will no longer say about the work of our own hand that this is our God, that we are capable of resolving all issues in the world. Number two. Amar Abchir Baraba, Amar Absimoy. Shlosha Hoyu Votaitza. May I have to tell you, I'm going to say a word of the Briske Rav, the Velden Soloveitchik Zechitzonik Lebracha. I think it's got to be well known. It's the first word that I heard from the Briske Rav when I arrived in Yeshiva in Baltimore about 53 years ago. And it made a great impression on me. And I think it has been enshrined for all time now, because this Gemara appears in Sota, it also appears in Sanhedrin, and the art scroll Gemara footnote down at the bottom brings the Briske Rav. But now you're going to hear it the way he said it. Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Rav Simoy, Shloshu Hoyu Vota Itza, there were three members of the cabinet of Paro. When Paro called for the destruction of the Jewish people, let us deal wisely with them, there were three members of his cabinet. They were Bilam, Iyov, and Yitro. Gemara says, Bilam Shagad, Bilam who advised, throw Jewish children into the Nile. Neherag was killed. Iyov Sheshatak, Iyov who remained silent. Nidon B'Yisurin was judged with terrible, terrible suffering. When we want to describe frightening and suffering, we talk about the suffering of Iyov. Yitro Shebarach, Yitro who fled, he objected to the plan for the final solution of the Jewish problem, and he fled. Zachu Mimnei Bonov Sheyoshu B'Lishkat HaKazit. His grandchildren sat in the office of the hewn stone. That was the office of the Sanhedrin on Har HaBayit. And of course he became the father-in-law of Moshe Rabbeinu. Briske Rav asks, why is Iyov punished for having remained silent? Iyov remains there when there are two against him, Paro and Bilam. Iyov is outvoted. It really makes no difference what Iyov is going to say. He's not going to carry the day. So he remained silent. So what was wrong about his silence? Said the Briske Rav the following. And it's best the way he said it. Oibes tut vei schreiten. If it hurts, then you cry out. You stub your toe. You stub your toe. It's not a matter of deciding, should I say ouch or should I not say ouch? It comes instinctively. You hurts. You fall. You cry out. Since Eov didn't cry out, Eov mishreit nicht, metos, it means, as it tut nicht weh, it doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt. When Jewish children are going to be thrown into the Nile, Eov, you're going to have to learn what it means to suffer. You're going to have to learn what it means to suffer. And this was, I remember being so moved when I heard this for the first time. Mm-hmm. If there's pain, if a human being, a fellow Jew, is in pain, even if you're not in a position to help, but it has to cause you pain. You have to feel the pain. Without shying, you have to speak out. We sometimes find that the very same person remains silent and is rewarded for that, and speaks out and is rewarded for that. There's no such thing that any one of the two is preferred over the other. Shlomo HaMelech, in fact, said, there's a time, lachashot, a time to remain silent. Ve'ik ledaber, and there's a time to speak. You won't believe it. You won't believe it. My elementary school graduation from Torah Vedas, so the yearbook was called The Scroll. And you know, you had everybody's picture over there. Under my picture, they wrote, silence is golden. I think back, and I'm wondering, I always say that I was a very shy, reserved, embarrassed little boy, and was probably, everything that happened since was simply in order to, make that part of my past. I may be overcompensating in the other direction, but that's what they wrote. I still have a copy of that yearbook. Silence is gone. Rachel, the Gemara in Megillah, number 3, I'm not going to read the text, but I'll tell you what the Gemara says. The Gemara says, B'schar tzniut, because of the humility, and they mean here the silence of Rachel, she was zeicher that the king Shaul came from her, first king to arise over Israel. And then, of course, later on, Esther also comes from Rachel. What was the humility of Rachel? So the Gemara describes that when Yaakov first met her, he asked her to marry him. So she said, no, I have an older sister, and my father is a deceitful man. So Yaakov says, I can handle it. I'm a brother of his in deceit. I can handle it. She must have laughed to herself, thinking, Yaakov thinks he's going to be capable in out-deceiving Lavan. He doesn't know that he has met his match. And then the fact is, the night of her wedding, and she's supposed to be the kala that's going to the chuppah, and she sees that her sister is being taken. She had two choices. One was to shout out in rage, you can't do this, and it would never have happened. But she was concerned about the shame and the embarrassment of her sister Leah. So therefore, there were certain signals and codes that had been made up between Rachel and Yaakov so that he should know who she is.
And she gave all of that information over to her sister Leah so that she should not be embarrassed. We're talking about courageous silence, absolutely courageous silence. I would say just about superhuman silence. Shlomo HaMelech, 8 Lachashot, there's a time to remain silent. But is Rachel always the silent one? Oh no, she isn't. The Haftorah of the second day of Rosh Hashanah, we learn the Haftorah. The Jewish people are being taken out into exile by Nebuchadnezzar and Nebuchadnezzar. And she comes out above her grave, above Kever Rachel, and she cries out to the very heavens. Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov have already stood before God, Yirmiyahu, Yishayahu, Moshe Rabbeinu, I don't know who else. But then Rachel, Kol Berama Nishma, Kor Hashem, so says God, the voice is heard on high. Nehi, Bechi, Tamrim, moaning, bitter crying. Rachel, Mevaka, Albaneha, Rachel crying for her children. May Anolahi Nachem, she refuses to be consoled, Alboneho Kienenu, because her children are not there. She refuses to be consoled. Nothing. She cries out, the very heavens shake. God is listening intently. Erev Shabbos, I spoke to my good friend, Rabbi Nachman Kahana. You all know Rabbi Nachman Kahana. Yeah. So, says, Shlomo, I want to tell you a nice word that I said. So he tells me, Alboneha is a plural, ki einenu is a single. She cries about her children, plural, because he is not there. So he said, she cries for all of her children, but she's not going to be consoled until every last one returns home. I told him, Nachman, I'm going to say it tomorrow in the drasha, and I'm going to quote you. I want you to know, I did it. I said it, and I quoted his name. Even Jonathan Pollard. Every last one. Ramachat. You name it. They're all going to be back. Kor Hashem, so the Rebbeinu Shem says to her, Mini Kolet Mibechi, withhold your voice from crying, Veinayich Midima, restrain your eyes from tears, Ki Yesh Sachol Fulatechum Hashem, Yeshavu Mei Eretz Oyev. There is reward for all that you've done. Your children will return from the land of the enemy. There is hope for your end, says God. Yeshavu Banim Lekvulam, children, the sons will return to their families. We are almost probably here because Rachel cried. The promise that Veshavu Banim Lekvulam, her children, will return from exile, this promise was made to Rachel because she refused to be consoled. I think that we should stop for a moment to think that we are here because of Rachel. Because Rachel knew, first of all, when to remain silent, and maybe more important, she also knew Eit L'daber. She knew when to speak out, to cry out at the top of her lungs. The Rashi on Eit L'daber had mentioned Vatoshar Devorah. Devorah. Devorah sings. Here was the great threat to the Jewish people from Sisra, commander-in-chief of the forces of the enemy. They gathered in Emek Yisrael for the great battle. The song of Devorah isn't only a song. In the song of Devorah, Devorah also makes very strong accusations. And that's the essence of what this Russia is all about. And it's those accusations that we have to listen to. She talks, yes, about the great victory, V'sarai B'Yisachar, in Devorah, the tribe of Yisachar,
And all of her officers, they were there with Deborah. V'Yisachar, Cain, Barak, Yisachar, together with the commander in chief of our forces, Barak ben Abinoam, Ba'emek, Shulach, Baraglav, into the valley they went on foot.
Oh, but Biflagot Reuven, the withdrawal of Reuven, Gedolim Chikikelev, needs great contemplation. Reuven didn't come. Reuven didn't participate. Reuven didn't call out in outrage. Reuven wasn't there when Klal Yisrael needed them. Reuven remained silent. So she says about Reuven who remained silent, Lo yashavta bein hamishpatayim. Why did you remain sitting by the boundary lines? Lishvoa shvikot adadim. To hear the bleeding of the flocks. Reuven is right across the Yarden. He has all his grazing land. Klal Yisrael is in serious, serious trouble. An enemy has attacked. And we get a picture of Reuven sitting very pastorally, tending his flocks, maybe playing his little Khalil, and he's not involved. He's not involved. He remains silent. Lo yashavta bein hamishpatayim lishmor shvikot adarim. Oy leflagot Reuven, for Reuven's withdrawal, Reuven's restraint, Reuven's silence, gedolim chikrei lev. Oh boy, we have to figure this out. What happened over here? Why did you remain silent? There's an issue that involves all of Klal Yisrael. Gilad Bever Hayarden Shochem. Gilad remained on the other side of the Jordan. V'don Loma Yogur Aniyot. Don, why was he out there with his ships at sea? Osher Yosham Lechof Yamin Balmifratzot Yishkon. In this last passage, she talks about those who did come. Not only Yisachar came, but Zvulun, An, Cheref, Nashol, Amud, V'naftali, Amudom, Yisada, Zvulun, risked his life, and so too Naphtali on the heights of the battlefield. We've gone through an extremely difficult time here in the last year, year and a half. Mm. We've gone through a difficult time from Tisha B'Av until now, and it's not over. There were those who spoke out, and there were those who remained silent. And the cheshbon hanefesh that's made after the tragedy that has taken place over here must include asking the question, those who remain silent, why did you remain silent? And I'm talking not only about the major segments of the religious community here in Eretz Yisrael. Major segments of the religious community in the United States of America, in the modern Orthodox community, in the Orthodox community, in the Zionist community, in the Haredi community, here and there. I don't understand. Leflagot Reuven Gedolim Chikei Lev. I don't understand why people remain silent. I don't understand. Here is a Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva. I keep coming back to this Rambam. I'm haunted by this Rambam, time and time again. This is the second half of a Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, third chapter, third halacha. The first part of the Rambam is known to everybody. The first part of the Rambam is that famous statement of the Rambam that the sounding of the shofar, though it is Gzeirat HaKatuv, it is a divine decree, but there is a message in the sounding of the shofar. Awake, you sleepers, arise, you slumberers, get out of the rut in which you've been in. Begin to take a look at life seriously, see where you're going. What are you doing? Then he says, Lefichach, second line. The person has to see himself all year as though he is perched precariously half innocent, half guilty. Imagine the scales of justice. There they are, absolutely equal. V'chein kol ha'olam, he has to look at the whole world. Chetz yom zakai v'chetz yom chayim. Half innocent, half guilty. Which now must lead a person to the conclusion. Chot ochet eich echad. If he sins one sin, you know what he did? He has inclined himself and the whole world. He's made them all guilty. And he has caused them destruction. We learned this Rambam when we studied the Haftorah the first day of Rosh Hashanah. But there are a few new things that I've learned in the Rambam since 2 weeks ago. Also mitzvah achas, if he does one mitzvah, hadei hichriya tatzvah with kol ha'olam kulo lekavzchut, he has inclined himself and the whole world for merit. One mitzvah, and he's made literally all the difference in the world. V'garam lo v'lehem shua v'hatzolah, and he has caused himself and them great salvation. Now watch, I want to point out something we haven't pointed out in the past. When it says that he did one sin, so it says hichriya et atzvo bet kol olam kulo lekach over v'goram lo hashchosa, has caused destruction for himself. When he does one mitzvah, the Rambam says war, v'goram lo v'lahem, he has caused for himself and for them tshuva v'hatzola, salvation and rescue. He didn't say that when he talked about a person doing one Aveira. When he talks about doing one Aveira, so the Rambam says he has caused for himself destruction. Because you know what? You did an Aveira? What do you think? You think the Rebbeinu was going to let the world be destroyed. You just didn't have the schus of being the one to save the world. You know what? Somebody else is going to get that schus. When he does a mitzvah, then the Rambam says, "Goram lo v'lahem tshuva v'hatzolah." He causes for himself and for them great salvation and rescue. Shenema v'tzadi v'sodam. A number of the ideas that we expressed with regard to this, I have told you gentleman to whom I was sent on a mission 12 years ago when there was an important vote that was going to take place in the Knesset, and we needed this man to influence the party that he headed that they should vote against the proposal, and I was sent with 1,300 signatures calling upon them to vote against the proposal. And in the course of the conversation, he tells me, "We're going to abstain. We're going to abstain." I told you, you'll recall, that usually the great retort and the great reply we always think of after the conversation is over. An hour later, "Oh, what I should have told him. Ich hab mir da verhandelt und den Tag nicht da. Oi, private." And then you go over it in your mind, and you're really so aggravated, you didn't say the right thing at the right time.
Yeah.
Over here, for some strange reason, I had, I think they sent it down from heaven. I believe it was the third day of the Aseret Yemei Tshuva, during which, in fact, is one should learn a chapter a day of the Rambam Hilchos Tshuva. So this was the third chapter, it must have been the third day, and I learned it in the morning. And I tell him after he responds that they're going to abstain. So I told him this Rambam. And I asked the question on the Rambam. The Rambam posits only two possibilities. There's the whole world hanging in the balance. And yet one possibility is that the man will do a mitzvah. And the other possibility is that he's going to do aveira. So I said, why doesn't the Rambam posit a third possibility? He'll abstain. He'll do nothing. He'll do nothing. To which I said, because the Rambam assumes a human being, for better or worse, takes a stand. He does something. To do nothing, that's not a mensch. That's not a mensch. He didn't talk to me for 5 years after that. And he was justified in not talking to me. But this year we said a bit more. The one who abstains, when he has it within his power to bring salvation to a whole world, that's a chet. That's a chet. Can there be a greater sin than holding it within your hands, the possibility of bringing tshuva v'hatzola to a whole world, and you don't do it? That's not there. The Raman is saying, men cannot remain silent. Man cannot remain silent. There's no such thing as abstaining. There's no such thing as withdrawing. He's expressing the words of Devorah, Lomo yoshavto bein hamishpatayim. What were you doing over there? There's a time for silence, and there's a time to speak out. Let's turn over. We're going to learn about a time for silence that will ultimately become a time for speaking out. Terrible tragedy has occurred. The brothers of Yosef have sold him into slavery. To Mitzrayim, tragedy that dogs us throughout all the generations. Onru, they said to one another, Medrash Tanchuma, they said to one another, listen very carefully, Nacharin Beinenu, let us make a ban of excommunication between us, Shelo Yagid Echad Mimenu LeYakov Avinu, that nobody under curse, nobody should say anything to our father Yaakov. Amar Lahem Yehuda, so Yehuda said, Ruvein Eino Kan. Ruvain is not here. Ruvain is the one who, in order to save him from his brothers, had put him in the pit. He had to be home that day. It's while Ruvain is away that they take him out of the pit and they sell him to the Midyanim and the Ishmaelim, who sell him to Mitzrayim. So Ruvain isn't there. So Yehuda says, in order to establish the halachic validity of the ban of excommunication, we need a minion. And we're only nine because Ruvain isn't here. Ma'asu, what did they do? Shitfla Kodesh Baruch Hu be'oto achedim shelo yagid la'aviyem. They included the Rabbeinu Shlomo to be the center, the tenth of the minion, that he too should not tell Yaakov. Kivu shiyorad Ruvain balayel lo'oto achbor. That night, Ruvain went back to the pit, Lahaloto, to bring Yosef out for Lo Mitzo, and he didn't find him. Korah begodov, he tore his garments, Ubocha, and he cried. Chozo Le'echov, he came back to his brothers, and he said to them, Hayeled Einenu Vani, Ono Ani, Bo, the boy isn't there, and where am I going to go? What will I do with myself? Higidu Lo Es HaMaizeh, they told him what they did, that Hachayim, and that there's a ban of excommunication on anybody who speaks. Bishatak. Ruvain remained silent. The Afak on his brother, and the Holy One, blessed be he himself, Afamisha Katumbo, even though it says about him, Magid, the Bor of Yaakov, he tells his things to Yaakov, Dovah Zeh, Lo Higid, he never told him that the brothers had sold Yosef into slavery. Because of the ban of excommunication. That's why Yaakov said, Torov, Torav Yosef. Yosef has been torn apart by a wild animal. I have two main questions on the Medrash. Question number one is, I don't know of a halacha that says that you need a minion to establish a chayim. As long as the people present accept upon themselves that they're not going to say this, that's enough. If anything, maybe you will need a bezin of three, but a minion, you need for a davar shekedusha, something of sanctity, kadosh kedusha, baruch hu, kriyas haTorah, shmona esrei. That's what you need a minyan for. Who needs a minyan for a cheder? Bigger question, of course, is, do you know what kind of silence this is? This is a conspiracy of silence. This is a conspiracy of peace. And the Rebbeinu Shel Olam agrees to be part of this conspiracy of silence. Unbelievable. Why does he do it? He should thunder from the very heavens against the terrible act that has taken place. But no. He becomes the tenth of the minion. He remains silent. Reuven remains silent. Reuven, more than any other, should have railed with anger. He remains silent. Pshat in the Medrash is the following. Some of the brothers, maybe all of the brothers, understood that if there will not be a ben of excommunication, with the passage of time, the following is going to be the scenario. I can imagine it now. They're going to come home. They're going to see terrible suffering, their father. They are going to have guilty consciences. They're going to walk around full of pain. They're walking around with this horrible secret. The pressure begins to build. And somebody's going to crack. Somebody's going to break. Who do you think will break first? And how do you think he's going to tell it to his father? I'll tell you. The one who's going to break first is the one who's going to think that he's not guilty. And you know what he's going to do? He's going to come to his father and say, Tata Laban, you know what he did? You know what they did? If we can permit that to happen, if we can permit the blame game to begin, if you saw the News of the Week in review in the New York Times last week that comes with the Jerusalem Post Monday edition, so they have a half a page with pictures of all the people involved in the New Orleans Katrina disaster. Yeah. And the top of the page says, the blame game. They have a picture of Bush and arrows coming from Bush in all directions. This guy's to blame, that guy's to blame. The mayor of New Orleans is blaming a few others. The governor, American relief agencies, everybody's blaming everybody else. If the brothers would not have been on the ban of excommunication, you know what would have happened? They would have destroyed themselves with the blame game. They would have torn each other apart. That family would never be able to create a Klal Yisrael that will be necessary for every Dorosh of Kedusha. There will never be a minyan to say Kaddish, Kedusha, Baruch Hu. No Kiddush Hashem will ever be present, because there will be a family that will have tore itself asunder from within by blaming one another. You think it hadn't begun? Oh, believe me, it had begun already. Right after the story, it says, Vayeged Yehuda Meitechov, Yehuda went down from his brothers. It's an interruption in the story of Yosef. The Pasuk says, and Yosef was brought down to Egypt. And then they tell us the whole story of Yehuda leaving his brothers. And it's only at the end of that story where Peretz and Zarah are born, it starts again, and Yosef was brought down to Egypt. So Rashi, number 7, by Yibetahi, Yehuda went down, Loma Nisbechot Parsha Zulikam, why is this Parsha of Yehuda here? V'hifsik v'parsha Tosha Yosef, and it interrupts the Parsha of Yosef. L'lame, this comes to tell us, Shaholi Duhu Echov Nigidulaso, his brothers brought Yehuda down from his greatness. Kishero B'tzorat Aviyem, when they saw the pain of their father. Omro, it started, they said, Ato Amar Tolemachro, You said that we should sell him. You're guilty. Ilu amarto lahashi. Though, if you would have told us, take him back home, hayinu shonim lecha, we would have listened to you. So vayet, he moves away from his brothers. You know what's beginning? What's beginning is the disintegration of a family. And do you know what is ultimately going to save this family? Because there's a ben of excommunication. Nobody can walk over to Yaakov and say, he did, they did. They're going to have to walk with this pain inside. And 22 years later, when they are standing in the presence of Tzafnath Paneach, the viceroy of Egypt, and they are accused of being spies. Number 8. The great statement, they finally open up, the first time that they speak about it since the sale of Yosef, since their betrayal of their brother. Vayomru ish el echav, each one said to another, Avol ashemim anachnu, we are guilty. Avochinu about our brother, asher ra'inu tzoras nafsho, we saw his pain, b'in chananoe leinu, when he pleaded with us, below shamanu, we didn't listen to his pain, al kein boi leinu atzorazot. That's why this tzora has befallen us. You know why they are ultimately able to achieve this? Because they had to remain silent. If they wouldn't have remained silent, if they wouldn't have had to remain silent, they could never have achieved tshuva. They could never have repented, because they would have found fault with everybody else, but not with themselves. And if you find fault with everybody else, you can't do tshuva. You have to be able to say, I sinned. And the fact is that they all sinned. There are those who sinned by doing the act, and there are those who sinned because they remained silent. If you weren't Shimon and Levi, and you weren't Yehuda, but you were Yisachar, you were Zvulun, you were Dan, you're Naphtali, did you cry out? Did you object? Or did you remain silent? That's the answer to one question. The question about whether you need a minion. You know why you need a minion for the ban of excommunication? Because this ban of excommunication is a davar shebikedusha. It's an act of great sanctity. It's in order to bring the Jewish people into existence that will be able to say kadosh ein kedusha. There was a second question. Second question, why does God join this unholy alliance? You know why? Because the Rebbein Shem knows inevitably it's bound to happen. When a tragedy has occurred and the blame is handed out, somebody is going to say, and where was God, pray tell me? Where was the Rebbein Shalom? Where were you when all of this happened? The Rebbein Shalom knows that when blame is going to be handed out, he's going to get a piece of the blame for what was done by man. Man did it, but they're going to blame him. Where were you? Why didn't you bring the miracle? Why didn't you come down and pluck Yosef out of their hands? So you know what it means? If they can talk freely about it, they will ultimately accuse the Rebbein Shalom of complicity in this terrible act. That's a chilul Hashem. To remain silent, therefore, becomes kiddush Hashem.
Yosef was part of the
back of that failure
too, because he never felt that it was
It's 22 years later when they finally say, "Aroh Hashem and Anachnu," that we are guilty. It is only then that Reuven, who has been controlling himself for 22 years, first shouts, "Vayan Reuven otam le'mor," and Reuven answered them saying, "Hello, Amarti Aleichem, but I said to you, le'mor," quote, "I said to you, I'll take it to Vayelen, don't sin about the child below Shematem," he didn't listen. "V'gam domo hinei nidrash," and behold, his blood is being demanded of us now. I once said that this pasuk used to bother me, until I decided that, you know what bothered me about this pasuk, is that I was brought up in a Western culture that has certain forms of conduct that may not necessarily be correct. For example, the idea of "I told you so." Nobody does that. No, in nice company, you don't tell somebody, "I told you so." What's Reuven saying over here? "I told you so." You know what the Torah is telling us? There are times that you have to say, "I told you so." You have to make sure that the terrible crime that was committed is something that they will remember forever. "I told you so. I told you so. I pleaded with Jewish organizations, the United States of America, to speak out. I begged. Failed. I devoted a month and a half, 2 months. At least come out for a national referendum. At least." Silence. Absolutely accursed silence. Lomo yoshavta bein hamishpatayim. But why did you sit there silently, playing your flute and watching your flocks? There's a time to speak out. There's a time for silence. There's a time to speak out. The brothers knew, following the sale of Yosef, that this was a time for silence. It's a time for cheshbon ha'nefesh. Because if we're going to let everybody say whatever they want to say, we're going to destroy ourselves. We will destroy ourselves from within. We will never build a climate stone. Number 9. By the way, it says over there, number 8, going back for a moment, they didn't know that Yosef is listening because the interpreter was there. Vayisov ba'alein vayevki, he turned away from them and he cried. And he came back and he said to them, and he spoke to them, and he took him on. Yosef is crying. He's heard his brothers admit their guilt. Why doesn't he reveal himself? This is the moment. Because you know what Yosef wants to do? Yosef knows of a Rambam in the second chapter of the Tshuva. The Rambam says, do you know what perfect Tshuva is? When a person finds himself in precisely the same position with the opportunity and the will to do the same Aveda, and one doesn't do the Aveda because of tshuva, that's it. You know what Yosef is doing? After he cries and he turns to speak to them, he's giving them the opportunity to do tshuva. He takes Shimon and puts him in jail. And you know what Yosef is hoping for? That they would say, "Oh no, you're not going to take a Yiddish kid from us. We'll tear you apart." And you know what happens?
fallen, he's heartbroken. They let him take Shimon. You know what Yosef knows? Yosef knows now that he's going to have to set up the situation again. Create the framework. He's going to have to call upon them to bring Binyamin. And he's going to frame Binyamin. And they all are brought back. Next trip to Mitzrayim. It's going to have to wait. And there it is. They've now brought them home. Binyamin is the one who stole the cup. The tension inside Yosef is bringing him to the breaking point. He tells them, I'm going to keep Binyamin. He's going to be my slave. This is it. It's their last chance. How are they going to respond? How are they going to react? Are they going to, God forbid, fail again? Then there's no hope for them. Vayigash Elav Yehuda. Yehuda comes over to him and he prepares himself to speak tough language. Rashi even says he's ready for war. You and Paro will wipe the two of you off the face of this earth. This boy is not staying with you. Eich ele el avi, how can I go to my father and the boy is not with me? Yehuda most probably thinks that he's sending the fear of God into this Safnas Paneach character. What he doesn't know is that inside Yosef is thrilled, he's full of joy. He'd most probably want to cover his face and start smiling. They did it. They didn't fail again. They're doing tshuva. They're not going to leave a Yiddishkind in the hand of the enemy. And that's when he turns to them and he says, Ani Yosef, Ani Yosef. He has brought them into the whole process of tshuva. To a most successful culmination. And you know why it all started? Eight lachashot. There's a time to remain silent. And eight ledaber. And there's a time to speak out. The brothers knew when to remain silent. God knew when to remain silent. Reuven knew when to remain silent. Medrash even says Yitzchak knew about it and Yitzchak knew to remain silent. Vayehi Macharos, the day after the sin of the Egel, the day after the sin of the Egel, the 3,000 who worshipped the Egel have been put to death. Vayehi Macharos, Moshe says to the people, Atem chatatem chata'a g'dolai, you sinned a great sin. And now, Elel Hashem, I'm going to go up to God. Ulai achapra ba'ab chatasnam, maybe I will find forgiveness, atonement for your sin. Vayoshev Moshe Hashem, Moshe returned to God and he said, Ono chota ha'om azeh chot chata'a g'dolai. Vayasu lehen alehei zov. This people has sinned, they chatog the law, they have made a god of gold. I don't understand what Moshe Rabbeinu is talking about. All of those who worship the Egel have already been put to death. What's the great sin? What is the meaning of the word chata'ah? You ever heard of a chata'ah? I heard of a chait, an avon, a pesha, a chata'ah. What's a chata'ah? He says it twice. You sinned the Chatar Gedolah. Chatar Gedolah. He goes up to God and he says, Ono Chatar Hamazeh Chatar Gedolah. They made a god. They didn't. We didn't make it. You know what Moshe Rabbeinu was telling them? 3,000 people are making an Egel Hazor. What did the other 2 million Jews do then? Was there a demonstration? Was there a demonstration? To just stand up with rage and cry out? Did you put on orange?
What did you do? You remained silent? How do you remain silent? There is a sin of commission and there's a sin of omission. The 3,000 who worshipped the Egel committed the sin of commission. But those who remained silent, the sin of omission. That's what a chata'ah is. And I'll prove it to you. The end of Parashat Shofim, it says, if a man is found dead between two cities, Sanhedrin has to measure off to the closest city, and the closest city has to bring an Egel, a young calf, down into a valley and chop its head off. And it says that the elders of the city have to lift their voices, number 10, our hands did not spill this blood, and our eyes did not see. You ever seen Shahu spelled the way it's spelled here, with a hey at the end? Shafu is always spelled with a vav at the end. Yadenu lo shafu, our hands did not spill this blood. Rashi on the side, the famous Rashi, Yadenu lo shafu. V'chi also alev, did it occur to anybody that the elders of the fasting were killers? They have to say, our hands didn't spill this blood, and we didn't see. You know what they're supposed to say? Are the elders of Bezdin spillers of blood? You know what they have to say? That we did not see this man and let him go without aid and assistance. If we saw him and he needed food, we gave him. We did not just let this man go through our town and pay no attention. We didn't remain silent. We're innocent. Spilling blood can either be the act of the murderer. Spilling blood can be the authorities that don't do what should be done to make sure that blood will not be spilled. They carry the blame. A hey means the sin of omission, remaining silent. There's a number 11, there's a pasuk from Mishlei that scares the wits out of me. Absolutely frightening. Otem ozno mizak adal. The one who closes his ears from the cry of the poor. Gam hu yikra v'lo yeyoneh. He'll call out and he won't be answered. You close your ears to the cry of the poor, or those who are suffering, or those who are in need, or those who cry out to you and you don't hear, and you remain silent. You're going to call out to the Rabbi Yisrael and he's not going to answer. Rabbi Yisrael says, Mida k'neged mida, measure for measure. I don't understand how those who remain silent can get up on Rosh Hashanah and give a say, Shema k'leinu Hashem l'keinu, hear all voices God over, chus v'rach ha'eloinu ha'rachmanas. Did you hear? Did you listen? Were you tuned in? Did you care? Otem ozno mizarak adal, the one who closes his ears from the cry of the poor, gamhu yikra v'lo yeyoneh. Gamhu yikra v'lo yeyoneh. Sometimes I tell myself that these same groups, will they make the same mistake again?
Yeah.
I'm afraid that they're serial sinners. Serial sinners. A profound tragedy took place. I know. I hope I never
I never write up the lists of people and organizations that I spoke to who turned me down flat. Turned me down flat. I imagine those probably, maybe this is an ugly thing to say, but I can't help myself. I'm not living up to what they wrote in my yearbook. I'm sorry, I can't help it. They're raising money for Katrina, so they also have to raise money for Gush Katrina. What are you talking about? I don't understand. And whom? Now we need you to raise money after the Churban. I tell you, I can't help it. What has taken place during the course of this year? Tsunami, Rita, Stan, Katrina, Asia Now. All of these disasters. And I see the pictures. I see the pictures. I can't help it. I'm sorry. I can't help it. I see destroyed homes. And I see the exact same picture of Gush Katif, except all the rest are act of God, and this is an act of man. Churban? There had to be another way. There had to be another way. The answer dare not be, we'll destroy and we'll level Jewish homes. Give them a piece of land someplace else. They would never level one tenth of an Arab. And we even look at it as, look at it as a tremendous accomplishment. Churban! Churban! The people remain silent. It makes me crazy. Otem ozno mizak asdao gam hu yikrov lo yivaneh. Some while ago, my wife printed something out for me from the computer. If it's a good word, it goes from the computer to the fridge. Right? Got it? From the computer, it's printed out, goes on to the fridge. This one was that good that I printed it out and I put it on my, I have an address book. I don't use a Palm Pilot, a blueberry, a blackberry, any one of these things, I don't know how to use them. But you may remember from the old times, there were books in which you wrote with pen, that's my address book. On the outside of my address book, I pasted on exactly what you have on your sheet number 12. And I Xeroxed it from my address book. The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. You can never know when you say a good word what it's going to do for people. One of my fellows in shul came over to me afterwards and he says, Rabbi, that was a great drasha. He's from Ireland. Edmund Burke was an Irish philosopher. That I ended my drasha with an Irish philosopher, you understand. The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. And one has to have the wisdom to know when to remain silent and when to speak out.